Hello again.
Yes, hello.
Twice in one day, what a treat.
Yes. So, for the benefit of the 17, we had a meeting earlier because we've had some email problems. So we had a meeting with our web consultant, James, that was very helpful. So hopefully all your emails should be getting through now.
And you should be getting all the emails from me now.
Right. Yeah, and actually that's unintended consequences, isn't it? I hadn't thought about that. I think I'd better get James on the line again. Welcome to episode 336 of the Mid-Faith Crisis Podcast. My name is Nick Page, and there, all ready to email me, is Joe Davis.
Yes, indeed I am. Hello, mate. Good to see you. Here we are again.
Yes. Great. It's very hot, isn't it?
It's very hot. It's quite warm. Yes, it is.
And I'm once again stuck in a cupboard, so that's lovely, isn't it? Anyway, how are you? How are you doing?
Yeah, I think there's not much to report. Everything's going well. I'm doing my first wedding of the year.
Oh, that's
Saturday,
nice.
So that's our first and only, probably. So that's lovely. I love a wedding. And I'm seeing my family. So that's good. I was particularly moved to see the news the other day of Netanyahu nominating Trump for the Nobel Peace Award. And of course, I did think, probably couldn't think of two finer peacemakers, could you? In the world.
I don't think the Nobel Peace Prize has ever had, well, it's at best it's had a tangential relationship with peace, I think, over the years. Didn't Henry Kissinger get it? Somebody ridiculous got it. Anyway, yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, let's not a political podcast, so let's just move on swiftly, shall we? Although I do find I have to restrain myself. The other significant thing this week is finished a sizzle, as it's known, the little track for my TV programme that I'd like to make, which probably won't ever get made.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, this is sort of a kind of, you know, what do we do with spirituality in the 21st century if people are leaving church? You know, how are they expressing spirituality? And actually, it sort of took me back to the old Oasis days. I'm not sure if this strapline had gone by the time you joined Oasis, but they started off with the strapline Oasis, not the band, by the way, the charity. Oasis introducing people to Jesus. Do you remember that?
No, I think that was the strapline that I...
Okay.
I remember, and the one that we put on a new logo and all kinds of stuff like that. Yeah.
And I was thinking, that's probably actually sums up what I'm all about still. It's just I don't want to introduce people to the sort of stained glass window Jesus, but more the kind of great wisdom teacher who had a lot of very sensible things to say about how you could live your life. So I think that remains my mission in life.
It's good. Yeah, it's not a bad strapline, is it? It's pretty good, actually. Yeah.
It's not bad at all. So, life is well, and I'm happy. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Yeah, I've been doing quite a lot of churchy stuff. So I led a service on Sunday and done a couple of talks this week, one of which I'm going to sort of talk about in a little while, probably. Mm. Yeah, so but other than that, fairly lazy weekend. But it's quite quiet, and I like it when it's quiet because it enables you to establish a nice routine, you know. And like, I really look forward to tomorrow. So what I do now, what I'm trying to do, is get more of a routine. It's part of my lessons more year.
Oh, very good.
To try and really establish a strong routine. And so I'm trying to get the podcast edited tonight, you know, and then I get a clear day tomorrow, and I can go into Oxford and I go to the Bodleian and I work in the Bodleian, and then, you know, if I do my proper 4 hours work in the Bodleian, I can reward myself by going out and having a beer in a nearby pub.
Very good.
It's rather lovely. Yeah.
Oh, that really is good. Fantastic. And also, there's lots of sport on, which is tremendous for me. That's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And even as we speak, the test is going on, so I expect we'll lose at that.
Yeah, the only difficult thing about working in the Bodleian is fielding the enormous amount of texts and phone calls that tend to come in on a Friday morning from you. You know, that's the only difficult thing, to make sure it's muted, otherwise it goes mad.
You love it. Now, can I ask a sensitive question?
Yeah.
What I think everyone wants is a bit of an apricot update from you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So. Yes. Well, here's the thing. I have been harvesting my apricots.
Oh, bless you.
They are huge and orange and gorgeous. It's amazing. I've had about 10, maybe 12 off the tree so far. I reckon there's another 25 on there. I've never known anything like it. It is this hot weather, I think. It's led to an amazing crop. So, yeah, and they taste gorgeous, Joe. Here's the way to cook them, by the way, or here's the way to eat them, is the best way is I cook them in, I poach them in a syrup of honey and saffron. That is absolutely gorgeous. Yeah, yeah. Have that with a bit of yogurt and nothing better.
I assumed you were going to add some sort of alcohol into that, but yeah, well done. Sounds
well,
good.
I mean, I have it alongside, yes, yeah, sure, obviously. Sure.
But that's brilliant. Well done. That is a very satisfying thing, I imagine.
Yeah, so it's very lovely, yes. And so the key thing is just to get to them before the ants do. That's the thing.
Of course. Great.
Anyway.
Well, listen, we've got some matters arising because I think we need to pick up the AI thing. But before we do, Dave wrote in on a relevant topic saying, "Hi, Joe, I've been meaning to message for ages about this funny experience I had, but all Nick's ranting about AI last week seems the perfect opportunity to share this." He says, "Bedtime routine for my child usually involves listening to music on her so-called smart speaker. I submit my requests to said listening device and use the spoken prefix, OK Google. Bedtime routine also includes saying a prayer with my little one. I'll admit that more than once I've caught myself prefixing the prayer with OK Google by mistake. Now, on this particular evening, I thought I'd begun praying with Dear God, but maybe not, because imagine my reaction when a voice from the digital ether interrupted our supplication saying, 'You are, as always, very welcome.'" "Have a great week, guys. Cheese, Dave."
Gosh, I wonder what he's praying.
I don't know, but he does come up with random things, because I remember being in a very serious and very sad family meeting once. There was lots of tears in the room, and from nowhere Alexa piped up, "The average age of a sheep is 7 years for no reason.
Really?
And that was it. Yeah, I mean, you know, and it wasn't that appropriate to even laugh at it at the time. But no one had been talking about sheep. It just came out with it. And every now and then we'd be watching TV in the evenings, and suddenly from the kitchen, you could just hear a voice going, and Alexa decided to launch into something. I don't know.
I don't have any of these things. And the only use I have for Siri is I occasionally ask it to put a timer on.
Yeah, that's
for example, when I'm poaching my apricots, because you want to take your time over there.
And you don't want to overdo it.
No, exactly. You do not want overpoached apricots.
It's a problem.
So I don't have any smart speakers, and I've heard all these stories about people having them in their houses and then thinking that they're monitoring them and, you know, looking for adverts. I don't know. I think this is the big thing. I mean, thanks, Dave, for that email. I would question the word ranting. I don't know if I was ranting last week, was I?
I think you probably were.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, this is what happens. You give a reasoned argument and people think you're ranting. Well, but anyway, you know, the main issue behind all these things, behind the smart speakers and... is the people who run it, you know, what they and how they monetize it.
And
advertising. The thing is not so much the technology, although I do have some questions about that, but it's really the motives and the ethics and the people behind it as much as anything else.
You know, I do feel there are some further thoughts on AI, because as you were talking last week, two things happened. One, I felt a little bit guilty because I do use ChatGPT quite often as a sort of editing grammar checking kind of device, which I find very useful. But the other thing I felt last week was maybe I should be more scared than I am as well. And also just to acknowledge everyone, I mean, with the exception of yourself, I think everybody else in the world is starting to use it.
I don't think that's true at all.
Well, certainly all the business owners I know are using it, because, you know, all these boring reports they have to draw up, and, you know, health and safety policies and everything, they can do it in about 30 seconds now instead of days of putting them off. So I think it's very good for that sort of thing.
Presumably all really well thought through, therefore, and watertight policies really stand up to scrutiny.
Well, I think a lot of them are pretty, you know, form filling, box ticking exercises. You've got to have one, but you can personalize it. I can see why what the great appeal is. But here is my experience at the weekend. So with Google Photos, you can use the camera to identify wildlife. Now, I use the CCAP, but for some reason, we came across a feather, which I was pretty confident I knew what bird it was from. It was obviously from a magpie.
Mm.
But it misidentified it as a feather from a jay. And it definitely did misidentify it. That's not me getting it wrong. Is that it getting it wrong? And I just thought, well, if I hadn't been there, because I know jay feathers and I've found them before, including the lovely blue one, which was a very treasured find. Anyway, if I hadn't known that, everyone would have believed that it was a jay feather. Fairly trivial thing. I mean, not the greatest sin in the world. But it did make me think that one doesn't know what reality is. And if you do just believe whatever Google tells you, you are going to start believing falsehoods. And so it just got me thinking again, as we were starting to talk about last week, this post-truth society. And if you use AI to gather your information from it, it doesn't actually know what's true and what isn't true, because it's just collecting it off the internet. Quite a scary state of affairs, isn't it? Anyway.
Well, exactly. And that, I think that's the thing. And the question we've got to ask ourselves always, and this is almost separate to AI, but it's where do you go for knowledge?
Yes.
Where do you get your knowledge of the world from? Yeah. What are your sources? And this is exactly the same in mid-faith crisis about theology, for example. You know, you suddenly realise, well, hang on, where do I go now to find out the truth? Because I've always gone here. I've always gone to this, maybe this particular church or that preacher or this book or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then suddenly you think, well, okay, there might be some differences out there. There might be something else. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, you know, where do we go to find out these things? How reliable are the sources? What's their credibility? You know, what's their background? Who are they? And AI makes it virtually impossible to test this kind of stuff.
But also the reason AI is lying is because people lie.
Well, exactly. But or people just mistake, and you know, things become repeated, you know, and myths get out there. Or it's, and there's, I think, quite a lot of evidence. It's just trying to sell you something. It's just trying to tell anything. It's just trying to provide any information to you.
Yes.
It, you know, it feels like it's programmed to always give an answer, whether or not the answer is actually true or real.
Yeah.
And so, you know, our sources of truth become polluted, effectively. Who do we go to for knowledge? It's really important that we identify that.
Well, and if you thought The Salt Path was a documentary, think again.
Oh, yes.
But let's not go there. Anyway, shall we move on?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so let's do some feedback. Okay, so talking of truth and knowledge, Ian wrote in to correct you.
Okay. I'm an unreliable source in so many ways.
Actually, not so much to correct you, but to offer a different perspective on environmental issues. And I quite like this. He said, "Dear Joe and Nick, thanks so much for your recent podcast. We've been listeners from day one and still don't miss an episode." There are support lines to help you, by the way.
Yeah, there are. Yeah. If you've been affected by any of the issues you've heard about in this podcast, ring our helpline now.
He says, "There have been so many interesting topics covered lately and much to think about. I especially like Nick's short talk on what to care about in the last episode." He says, "It is with some trepidation then that I raise an issue of historical accuracy. However, that's brave. However, discussion of environmental issues often has the same effect on me as AI does on Nick. So here goes as as pithily as possible." So towards the end of the last episode, Nick said that our generation, he says, "I'm just a few years ahead of you, was not concerned about environmental issues when we were growing up." He says, "I beg to differ. Throughout my life, the subject of environmental damage has been very prominent." And then he says, "The Clean Air Act was passed by UK Parliament before I was even born, a direct response to the Great Smog of 1952, which actually claimed many lives. As young adults, we were told with absolute certainty that North Sea oil stocks would run out by the year 2000. One of the existential threats facing humanity at that time was, again, without any doubt being expressed, population growth and a corresponding inability to feed everyone. And 50 years later, the concern and government actions is much more about falling birth rates. He says there are many more examples: acid rain, cleaning of rivers, ozone depleting chemicals, nuclear weapons, to name but four. He says my thesis that there has been awareness of environmental issues, that much of the doomsaying has been wrong, that much has been done to address the environmental challenges, and that there has been huge progress in many areas, especially concerning poverty, child mortality, life expectancy, starvation, and average income figures have all improved dramatically right across the world in the last 50 years. He says, of course, there are still huge challenges for us to face. The one that I'm involved in professionally is textile waste and plastic. Plastics generally are very tricky to deal with. However, the approach needed is one of action suffused with hope, faith, and creativity, and with confidence in our ability to solve problems. The narrative we hear around climate is very rarely like this, but is much more often full of anxiety, powerlessness, and pessimism. And then he finishes, by the way, he says, and to lighten up a Trinity limerick for you, he says, yes, God was here right at the start, and in Jesus we see into God's heart, while the Spirit is real to inspire, cleanse and heal, with all kinds of gifts to impart. He says, this comes with very best wishes to you both from Ian.
Thank you, Ian.
Ian, thank you. And thank you for that delightful end.
Well, I mean, a few things though. I think perhaps I misspoke, but I don't recall saying that environmentalism wasn't around.
No,
I didn't. What I was trying to say, it didn't really impinge
on
me from a personal perspective growing up. It wasn't a major issue.
No, me neither.
It was a bit more sort of eccentric in a way, or out there, you know. And while we feared for nuclear war, we didn't really grow up with this idea that everything was going to end. Even, you know, I accept what he says about the environmental actions, and I suppose something like James Lovelock's Gaia book came out in the 70s, I think, and various other sort of things were started, Greenpeace and all this kind of stuff. So it was there, but it wasn't overwhelming in the way that it is now. I think that was the point I was trying to make, really. We didn't grow up. And the other thing that he was saying about you know, things turning out not quite the same. That may well be the case. We certainly hope so. There's a wonderful G.K. Chesterton quote, and I can't quite remember exactly, but he talks about a game that human beings love to play called Cheat the Prophet. And what happens is experts say, here's what's going to happen, and then the human race listens to them and goes away and does something else entirely. And so that may be the case, except I think that in this case the prophet is the planet. It might be harder to cheat, but certainly certain things. Who's that Swiss guy, Hans Rosling, I think, is the Swiss statistician who did a book called Factfulness. And so
yes,
we are sold a narrative of things getting a lot worse all the time, whereas in fact in some cases, as Ian says, life expectancy, things are getting better and have got a lot better. So I suppose it's about balance, isn't it, really?
Yes, and significantly in that book he did just wanted to bring some good news to the world, but even he said the one thing I can't deny is the state the climate's in. But very good. Thank you, Ian, that was terrific. So I think we're going to talk about cynicism, because this was something you have been thinking about recently.
Well, listen, I had to give a talk this week on cynicism and prayer.
Oh, wow.
You see?
Yeah.
And it's interesting, isn't it? You talked about the salt path story. And, you know, we live in this world where constantly we're finding out the good stories may not be quite as good as we thought.
Yes.
Now, I don't know actually what the facts of the matter are on there. No doubt we'll find out the truth eventually. But it's often the case, isn't it, that people who you like, or stories you love, it turns out not to be quite as good news as you thought.
Yeah.
And anyway, so cynicism is in the air, really. It's all around. And so I was asked to give a talk on cynicism and prayer, which was kind of slightly sort of challenging. I suppose that what I wanted to say to first start off about it is that it's a bit like when I'm accused of ranting, all right, if I can come back on that.
No, yeah.
Sometimes it's very easy, I think, to overstate the case slightly.
Yes.
You know, I mean, in that, I get accused of being grumpy.
Surely not.
I know.
No.
Whereas, you know, I am a lamb. No, I think actually what happens a lot, and it happens to us in mid-faith crisis as well, is you get labelled with certain things when you're not really that.
Mm.
So the first point about cynicism is I don't think a lot of people are truly cynical.
Mm. Okay.
You know, I think they might have a slightly cynical view of certain things. I mean, you were talking at the beginning about the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
You know, you might be cynical about that. But true cynicism is a complete sort of mistrust in people's motives, really. It's like a sort of metastasized distrust. It's got into your bones.
Right.
It's really spread throughout you, and you can't. Whereas I think a lot of people just have a lot of questions when it comes to prayer.
Yeah.
They're not cynical about prayer. They're baffled.
Yeah, and they've probably been affected by unanswered prayer and the seeming, you know, sort of strange pointlessness of it from time to time. I wonder if you, before we go any further, if you could talk a bit about the difference between cynicism and skepticism.
Well, I think it's about motives.
Okay.
That's where I would see the difference. A cynic mistrusts your motives for doing something, thinks everybody's out there, you know, on the make.
Okay.
Everybody's got a hidden motive for doing what they're doing. Whereas a skeptic might just be skeptical about what you're saying.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I think they're very close related, you know, because you've got doubt as well. But I can be skeptical of, for example, government claims, maybe, but not necessarily cynical about their desire to do something about it or their motives.
Okay, yeah, that's helpful.
And so that's how I saw it. And I just think it's too easy in the Christian sphere to label people as cynical about prayer when really, as I said, they're just disappointed, actually.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think cynicism is a function of largely of longevity and disappointment. You're just around a long time and things don't work out and you get sold things time and time again, or you hear the easy phrases over and over again, and you just end up in the end not really wanting to listen to them because you've heard it too many times.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you get people who are sort of posing as cynics. I think sometimes things with young people, you know, when they're posing as cynics, I think, oh, come on, you're not old enough. You haven't been disappointed enough. You know, come back in 20 years when you've lived my life and then we can talk about cynicism. You know, so I think it is easy, as I said, to put people in a box. And we have it with things like phrases like backsliding.
Hmm.
You know, when you're asking questions, are you backsliding?
Or
if you're not sufficiently enthusiastic about the latest sort of outreach program, you know, are you not really committed? You know, it's a way of actually, I think, making people feel bad about their doubts, really, is to accuse them of being cynical.
Yeah, sure.
I think we have to be very careful about using the word, really.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I think our role is to avoid cynicism. Cynicism ultimately doesn't help anything. We've got to find what hope we can and take a risk on hope. But equally, we've got to avoid doing things that make people cynical, you know, or speaking in ways that make people cynical. So I was talking to a lot of leaders and people like that and saying, don't use language that is bound to provoke cynicism.
Mm.
Because Jesus wasn't cynical, but he was realistic. You know, he knew the reality. I suppose if you create reality, you know it quite well, really. You're quite good at it. So he knew what the reality was. So there's lots of things in the Gospels, for example, that are quite, you know, striking, harsh. You know, he talks about Herod Antipas as that old fox.
Mm.
You know, he says, I'm sending you out as sheep among wolves. I know, he knows what's going to happen. Mm. He knows what they're going to do to him. So he's not unrealistic.
Mm.
And so I think the first thing is tell the truth about the faith.
Yeah.
Tell the reality of it. Don't dress it up. Don't sugarcoat it. You know, say it like it is. But then I did talk a little bit about some of the words, language that we use, you know, and things that I've done, because, you know, how do I stop being cynical about like prophecies and words of knowledge?
Yeah,
I don't think I am cynical about them. I just sort of am slightly neutral about them now, in a way.
I'm not neutral about them.
Are you not?
No, I think some of them are very silly indeed.
Yes. And I don't disagree with that.
I mean, I think I've always found with the prophetic words that there's a little bit of people just wanting to say what they want to say, but doing it under the guise of God. So you may say, well, that's a very cynical statement, but it just is my experience. And I think the prayer thing's particularly difficult because, like you say, it's the words people say. So, you know, I have no desire to go to a church and hear a sermon about how Jesus said, pray anything and ask in my name and it shall be done for you.
Mm.
With the clear implication, the obvious implication, that if I've done that, somehow my faith is insufficient. And, you know, it's okay for little things, you know. But when you prayed for someone to be healed and live and they've died, you do feel quite guilty if that was down to your faith.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's, yeah, you're absolutely right. There's cynicism and there's scepticism, and somehow I think it's really a healthy and vibrant part of our faith to question and really wrestle with these issues. But the slide into cynicism can be quite a negative thing and can actually suck the life out of you and other people.
I think it comes back to this motives, because cynicism demeans the person who's speaking. You know, it actually attributes malicious motives to
right,
them,
okay.
Which yeah, I think we yeah. certainly want to avoid.
Yeah,
I don't think that about words of knowledge. I'm exactly with you. I think most of them are good things to say. You know, people want to say something encouraging. They want to say something good. They might, but they don't feel confident enough to say it in their own words.
Yeah.
You know, and I want people to feel confident enough to give us a word of encouragement without having to say, the Lord spaketh this unto me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, yea verily. Yeah. You know, what I said in the talk was, I think we don't take it seriously enough. It's not that I don't believe in them. I do believe in them.
Hmm.
I just think we have to take them really seriously, these things, and don't just sort of rattle them off.
Hmm.
Because in the Old Testament, prophecy was a serious business. If you didn't get it right, something nasty would happen to you in the car park. You get taken out behind the bike sheds and stoned, wouldn't you?
The camel sheds, please.
Yeah, the chariot park. They took it really seriously. So we've, in a sense, we've trivialised it,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And we've sort of applied it to all kinds of things. I met a woman, I might mention it on the podcast, I'm bound to have. We've done 336 episodes, for heaven's sake. But I met a woman back in the early 90s, I guess, and she said, I play the prophetic bongos.
I think that's where the whole bongo thing started.
That was it. And you know, I was saying, it's just baffling why that particular ministry is not mentioned in any of Paul's letters. You know, he just focuses on these trivial things like, you know, being a teacher or an administrator or a healer. But the guy at the back of his church in Troas, who's happily playing the bongos and waving his hand, go, don't forget about me. Paul never mentions him. But again, it was this thing, wasn't it? And the 90s were mad. We used to encounter it all the time, didn't we, when we went to these places? That this thing about, I like doing this. It's not enough for me to like doing it.
No.
Or to feel even that God might be perfectly happy for me to like doing it.
Yeah.
I've got to anoint it in some way.
Anoint it by saying it's this ministry given to me.
It's a prophetic thing.
Yeah.
And so I sit in a lot of meetings or meet with a lot of people where they're saying, you know, we want to speak prophetically here. And basically we're all trying to decide what's the best thing to do. That's what we're trying to decide.
Exactly.
So I think the language we use is really key. You know, we don't have to overuse this stuff. If we overuse the spiritual and the mystical, we will actually make people cynical about it.
Yes, indeed.
And that's the last thing I want to do.
Yeah.
And the one that always gets me is faith goals.
Mm.
you know, faith goals, where I don't know, your pastor or whoever says, yes, we have a faith goal here. We're going to raise £14 million or something.
Yeah.
You know, that
Everybody
thinks, well, we've got to raise 20 grand for the new roof or something. And the minister marches in and says, look at my faith. Look how big my faith is. I'm going to plonk my faith down on the table. We'll all walk round it and have a look. We'll look at it admiringly. Because I've got a faith goal, which is £80,000. People are thinking, well, there's only 10 of us in the church. What are we going to do? You know. And then it becomes like you were saying, if you don't sign up to that.
You have a lack of faith. Yeah.
I'm suffering from lack of faith. And I need tablets, you know. I've got a faith deficiency, you know. And so you get suckered in. And then, of course, you don't get it. Or, you know, if you do get it, terrific. But most of the time, I think you don't get it. And so I was trying to say to people, we can help people not be cynical about these things by not being stupid in the first place.
That's such good practical advice.
I didn't quite say it like that, if I'm honest.
But you feel free here to say it.
Well, I just feel it. I you know, I've talked a lot about wisdom in the past. We just downgrade wisdom and we upgrade prophecy. And actually, cynicism grows from that, I think.
Yeah. May I make a brief point about prophecy?
Yeah, do. Is it going to be a prophetic word?
No, it's not going to be a prophetic word. It's going to be a plug for Fluffy Raw, his new book called The Tears of Things. And in there, he really goes back to the Old Testament sort of prophets.
Yeah.
And it's just a fascinating treatment and really insightful, I think. And because he's saying, look, you know, they didn't really go after these sort of one-on-one morality of individual people. There are certain exceptions, but generally they were critiquing corrupt systems, unjust systems. The things the prophets are always going for is injustice. And I think that was, for me, that was quite a helpful reminder and a challenge, in fact. So there clearly is still a role for the prophetic voice of the church.
Yes, because prophecy is about speaking God's truth into a situation.
Yeah.
And it's not, on the whole, in the Old Testament, about the future. You know, I mean, there are bits of it that are about the future. This will happen to you. I prophesy that if you go to war, you will get an arrow through the head or something. That happens a few times. You know, I mean, it's not much of a prophecy, is it? Lots of people get arrows through their heads if they go to war. But anyway, you know, it's most prophetic utterances in the Old Testament. They are slightly prognosis of what's going to happen, but they're really about political situations going on at the time.
Yeah.
And about how kings are acting.
Yeah.
You know, there's a huge amount of that. Anyway, I was also talking about prayer. I was supposed to talk about prayer, you know. The thing that I came down on is once, like the phrases that we use, I think people get cynical about prayer because they ask to pray in a way that they can't possibly pray. You know, they're told this is the one way to pray and we all have to do it. And it's in a manner or style or using a form of words that they find it really hard to sign up to. And I always take comfort in. Now, I don't think it was his words, but it was quoted in Richard Foster's book, Celebration of Discipline, where he says, pray as you can and not as you can't.
I love that. Yeah, absolutely.
And so I think one of the ways to avoid cynicism in prayer is just to pray as you can. It's not to give up prayer. It's not to stop praying. It's about praying in a manner that you find authentic, real, that you're not pretending, and that doesn't sort of force you to make great statements that you suspect aren't gonna you don't really feel or aren't gonna be true. For me, prayer is about praying in a manner that I feel is authentically me, you know. And that doesn't mean I stop praying for people. We've talked a lot about it in the past in the podcast. I carry on praying for people. I carry on praying for situations because I don't know if my prayers are going to change that, but I do know that prayer changes me.
Yeah, exactly. That would be my reason for doing it too.
So I'm going to carry on doing that. Yeah. And also, I'm going to carry on doing it because Jesus did it. And, you know, it seems fair enough if that seems a reason for
carrying on. Well, if you're going to follow Jesus, then you better
pray. I know. Look at me. Anyway, so that's really what I was thinking about. And I think it is important because, Yeah, we have these weeks where stories come out about things and people fall off their pedestals or are pushed off their pedestals the whole time. And it's easy to get cynical about people. But we have to go forward in hope, I think, about all this stuff. Maybe this is what Ian was saying in his email, you know, that we can give in to despair or we can go forward in a bit more hope.
Yeah, yeah. I heard a nice thing this week about the breastplate of righteousness, you know, when Paul's going on about the armour of God and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just sort of, it was just an aside comment, but I found it rather helpful. Why a breastplate of righteousness? You know, the breastplate protects the heart, and the sort of antidote to sliding into sort of cynicism and despair, which is very easy to do in today's world, is to put on the breastplate of righteousness, i.e. to live in a just way yourself. So if you want to know how to deal with all this negative news and how to deal with all the, you know, the rotten stuff that's coming in the world, it is to focus a little bit more on your own, dare I say it, righteousness. Not self-righteousness, but in the sense of, well, actually, here's what we can do. We can learn to live right.
Yeah.
And that will offer the world hope, which I think is a helpful reminder.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, great. Yeah.
Well, there we go. What do you think about that? All 17 of you, how are you avoiding cynicism? Where do you see cynicism? And indeed, how do you? What's the difference between cynicism and skepticism? That just good things to think on, I think. Let me know what you think. joe@midfaithcrisis.org. Love to hear from you, as always. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Thank you again to everyone who supports the podcast and gives to us. That means so much to us. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks to people who recommend it. That's a really terrific thing. And if you want to put a nice review up, that also helps word get out. We really appreciate it. But we'll be back with you next week.
Yeah, right. If you believe that, you believe anything, frankly.